So we're going to start from the top Mishnah on Yudalid Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah says, "Beis Shammai Omrim Tavlin Yidochin B'Madoch Shel Eitz V'Hamelach B'Fach U'Eitz HaParur U'Beis Hillel Omrim Tavlin Yidochin K'Darkan B'Madoch Shel Even V'Hamelach B'Madoch Shel Eitz." We have a machlokes when it comes to the malacha of tochin, of grinding, crushing up things on Yontif. Now again, even though normally the assumption is that Ochel Nefesh is always permissible on Yontif, again, we've already alluded to this point before, there are certain limitations to that. So the question is, let's say a person wants to grind up spices or salt on Yontif, how do you go about doing that? So Beis Shammai say that when it comes to regular spices other than salt, you can use a wooden mortar and pestle. As we'll see in a second, the normal mortar and pestle is made of stone. So a wooden one is kind of like a step down. That's a little bit of a shinui. When it comes to salt, you need even more significant of a shinui. Namely, you have to use either an earthenware mortar and pestle, or you have to use what's called an Eitz HaParur, basically a wooden spoon. Beis Hillel, however, are much more lenient. Beis Hillel say that when it comes to regular spices, you can just crush them normally in a stone mortar and pestle. And when it comes to salt, you have to use a wooden mortar and pestle. So the Gemara points out, everyone seems to agree in this Mishnah that when it comes to crushing salt on Yontif, you must use a shinui. And the question is, what's the source of that? What's the reasoning behind that? So the Gemara says, it's machlokas. So one opinion in the Gemara is that that all dishes require salt, but not all dishes require other spices, which basically is another way of saying that you should have known in advance that you were going to need salt, and you should have crushed the salt up before Yontif. In terms of other spices, you didn't necessarily know in advance that you were going to need them, and therefore you are justified in crushing them up on Yontif. The other opinion is that other spices, if they're left out, are going to start to go bad. Salt doesn't go bad when it's left out for a day or two. So the Gemara says, "My Benai, what's the difference between these two approaches?" So the Gemara gives two possible ramifications. Either the difference is, let's say you knew in advance that you needed some other spices. You knew in advance that you needed whatever, and again, I don't know, you needed pepper or turmeric or garlic powder, whatever it is. You knew already that you needed those things. So according to the first opinion in the Gemara, you would need to crush that up in advance. And if you didn't, you would need to use a shinu. According to the second opinion, that the difference is about whether it goes bad, so it doesn't matter if you knew in advance that you needed it. The other ramification is for saffron. So the Gemara assumes that the herb saffron also doesn't go bad when it's left out, similar to salt. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kol HaNidochen, Nidochen Kedarkan Va'afilu Melach. Comes Rav Yehuda and seems to disagree with our Mishnah. He says that even salt can be crushed normally on Yontif. So the question is, what do you mean? V'ha'amar Melach Ba'yashinu. Didn't we just get through saying a second ago that everyone agrees that salt requires a shinui when you're crushing it on Yontif? So the Gemara says, no. Hu da amar ki haitana. Desanya amar Rabbi Meir. Lo nechluku be shamayu ve selal al hanidochen she nidochen kedarkan u melach imahen. Lo nechluku el la ducha bifnei atzma she be shamay omrim melach befachu ve eitza parur le tzliya velo le kedera. U ve selal omrim bechol davar. Bechol davar sal kedaitach ele ima lichol davar. Basically, Rabbi Meir has a different version of this machlokas be shamay be selal. In other words, Rabbi Meir claims that be shamay Shammai and Beis Hillel actually do not disagree when you're crushing the salt together with other spices. Let's say you put salt and pepper and some other spices into the mortar and pestle together, then according to Reb Meir, everyone says that you don't need a shinui when you're crushing the salt. The machlokas, according to Reb Meir, is only when you're crushing the salt by itself. In that case, Beis Shammai claim that you're only allowed to crush salt on Yontif if you're using it for roasting, because when you roast meat, you only require a little bit of salt, whereas if you're using it to actually season your food, so then Beis Shammai say you can't do that because that's a very large quantity of salt. Whereas Beis Hillel say no. Beis Hillel say that no matter what you're using the salt for, no matter the quantity, you're allowed to crush salt on Yontif. Again, you're going to need a shinui. The only question is that according to Beis Shammai, you can't crush salt at all unless you're using it for roasting on Yontif. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Le Rav Acha Bar de la Livere. Rav Acha said to his son, Ki dayacht atzle atzluye vedoch. He said to his son, when you crush, again, at this point we're thinking maybe you mean spices, on Yontif, make sure to tilt your mortar and pestle. In other words, use some kind of a shinui when you're doing it. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes, Shama Kalbuchna, Amar Hailav Migavi Devesahu. Rav Sheshes heard on Yontif the sound of a mortar and pestle, someone crushing up spices. And he said, that's not coming from my house. It can't be that anyone in my house would be crushing spices on Yontif. So the Gemara says, why not? Vidilma atzluye atzle, maybe the person in his house was tilting the pestle, and which is considered a valid shinui. So the Gemara says, no, deshame dahavat salil kale. He heard it was like a clear sound. In other words, it was clear from the sound that he heard that the person wasn't tilting the pestle. Then the Gemara says, vidilma tavlin havu. Maybe it wasn't salt, maybe it was spices. And as we noted, regular spices can be crushed without a shinui. The Gemara says, no, tavlin nabuchim and nabach kalayu. When you crush spices, apparently the sound is different than when you crush salt. It sounds like a bark or something. So because of that, in other words, he was able to tell that the person was crushing salt, and therefore he knew that that can't be coming from my house. Fine. And the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, ein osin tisne, ve'in koshin ve'machtesha. The Gemara quotes two halachos. First halacha is, you're not allowed to make what are called groats on Yontif. Groats are basically what we call like cream of wheat or farina or like some kind of like a porridge that's made by crushing wheat into fourths. So the Gemara says you can't make that on Yontif because it's a very, very significant tircha to do that. And then the Gemara quotes a second halacha that you're not allowed to crush anything in a mortar and pestle on Yontif at all. So the obvious question the Gemara asks is, Tarte, how could these two halachos be true? These halachos seem to be contradictory because the first halacha sounds like there's a unique din that you can't make these groats on Yontif because they require a lot of effort. The second halacha is this more general principle that you can't crush anything. So which one is true? So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar, Ma Tamin, Osin Tisne, Lefi She'in Koshin Machdashes. The second halacha is really modifying or explaining the first one. The reason why you can't make these groats on Yontif is because you're not allowed to crush anything in the pestle. So then the next question is, Velema in Koshin Machdashes. Why not just, you know, skip the first one and go to the second one? Just say, you can't crush anything in a mortar and pestle on Yontif. So the Gemara says, no. Itane in Koshin Machdashes, Hava Amina Hanemila B'Machdashes Gedola, Avo B'Machdashes Ketana Ima Shapter Dami Kamash Milan. Had the Gemara just said that you can't crush anything in the pestle on Yontif, one might have thought that that's only problematic in a large mortar and pestle, but perhaps in a small one it's okay. So kamash v'lo, that even in a small one it's a problem. To which the Gemara then asks, what do you mean? The hasanya in kosim b'machtesh is gedola, aval kosim b'machtesh is ketana. The Braisa says beferish that you're allowed to use a small mortar and pestle on Yontif. So our hava amina is in fact correct. So the Gemara says no. Amar avaye ki tanya naminas nisa machtesh is gedola tanya. Yeah, you're right. In other words, the Braisa meant that you're not allowed to use a large mortar and pestle, but in a chanami, a small one would in fact be permissible to use on Yontif. That's one possibility. Rava amar lokashia halon. Rava gives a different approach. Rava says that the difference is it depends if you live in Bavel or Eretz Yisrael. Why should that matter whether you're allowed to crush salt or spices on Yontif? So the way that Rashi explains this is that people in Bavel typically did not have avadim. They did not typically own slaves or servants, and therefore there was less of a chance that there were people around the house who were going to start to be mezalzel in the halacha. So therefore, for the B'nai Bavel, we make this allowance where we say, even though you can't use a large mortar and pestle, you can use a small one. But in Eretz Yisrael, when many people had avadim, there was a chance that if you let them use the small mortar and pestle, the avadim are going to think that the whole thing is a joke anyway, so, you know, we could use the big one as well. So that's why there was this distinction. Then the Gemara says,
Rabbi, since when is the amount of work that you need to put in to make your food part of the sales? It's easier to check the cow than the
gadol. Well, no. Those are two different issues. In other words, the zilzel factor is what Rava was introducing. That distinction between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara's initial assumption, in other words, the reason why the Gemara says you can't make this porridge, you know, cream of wheat thing on Yontif, is because it entails a lot of tircha. Again, that's not a foreign concept. The idea of tircha we find by Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Yontif. You can't, in other words, again, obviously, certain things are not necessarily malacha, but they could still be problematic. Because they require excessive amounts of work on Yontif or on Shabbos. So again, that's not, you know, those two issues I think are a little bit different.
I just wonder why they quantify certain types of,
So this is the general question that I was alluding to at the beginning, and the question that we've already kind of addressed a little bit in the Masechta, which is, you know, isn't Ochel Nefesh Mutar on Yontif, you know, completely? Yeah. That's a legitimate question, but again, this is part of a much larger topic. There are some Rishonim based on a Yerushalmi who claim that it's not always the case. That there, in other words, for example, the Yerushalmi says that only Milisha ve'elach, only Malachos from Lashem, kneading and onwards, are Mutar on Yontif for Ochel Nefesh. Which means, let's say, for example, this is a case that we were discussing yesterday. Say, in terms of carrying food, right? So carrying food on Yontif, we know is mutter, but again, on the surface, you would have said, well, maybe not, because carrying is not not a food-related malacha per se. So again, you have to kind of iron out all these details. Just because ochel nefesh is mutter, it's not necessarily like a carte blanche that you could do whatever you want on Yontif. That's again, it gets a little bit confusing because it's not exactly clear why that should be if we think ochel nefesh is mutter, but the bottom line is that it's not straight across the board that everything is always mutter all the time. Okay.
Rabbi, I'm not going to ask the question. Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to make instant oatmeal on Shabbat?
On Shabbos, you can, if you use, klisheni, klishlishi, depending on what you think about that, that could get into an issue of bishul. Again, this whole Gemara is only discussing yuntif. So on yuntif, you could use the hot water directly because it's ochel nefesh, right? So that's not an issue. This topic we're talking about now is an issue more of tochin, of crushing it up. Again, when you're making instant oatmeal, you're not crushing it. Everything's already, been crushed up already. This is a tochin issue more than a bishul issue. Okay.
So it's something that you could do before.
Correct. Well, that's also another factor when it comes to Uchal Nefesh and Yatav. Correct. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rav Papi Ikla Leve Mar Shmuel, Aisi Le Daisav Loachal. So Rav Papi went to Mar Shmuel's house and they brought out this porridge, cream of wheat, farina, type of dish, and he refused to eat it because he assumed that it was made on Yontif. So the Gemara says, V'dolma b'machdesh k'tan avdua. Maybe they made it in a small mortar and pestle, which we said is mutter. No, the chazi da havadayik te, he saw it was crushed up to a fine powder. In other words, it was clearly not made, in other words, it was clearly made in a large mortar and pestle. V'dolma me esmol avdua. Maybe it was made yesterday before Yontif. No, the chazi da havakalif tzahare, he saw there was a certain sheen, color, to the porridge that made it obvious that it was made today. The other possibility is that in Mar Shmuel's house, there was this kind of this very laid back approach, because again, as we noted earlier from Rava, right? And when people had avadim, they might be mezalzel on the halacha. So Mar Shmuel apparently had all these avadim, and there was a chance that if he ate from the porridge, he may be condoning an activity which the avadim would be mezalzel. Again, for that whole concept of zilzel that we alluded to, that was the issue. That's why he refused to eat the porridge. Okay, the Mishnah now says haborer kitnios biyom tov beishama yomrim borer ochel veochel uveisel lomrim borer kedarko becheko bekanonu ve. Now we have another issue to contend with, which is the issue of borer on yontif. Now again, the starting point should be, of course it's mutter, it's ochel nefesh. But again, as we already noted already several times, that's not necessarily the case. The question is, how do you go about doing borer on yontif? I want to eat food right now. So, and again, I have beans and I have husks and shells and things like that on the beans that I want to get rid of. How do I do that? So Beishamai basically say that the regular rules of borer apply on yontif, meaning you have to take the ochel, you have to take the good stuff. So in other words, if you have a mixture of shells, husks, and beans, and you want to eat the beans, Beisham, I say, all you can do is pick up the beans. You can't start taking the shells and the husks and throwing them away. That would be borer according to Beisham. Beis Hillel, however, disagree, and they say no. They say you could do a regular borer with one caveat, and again, we actually alluded to this a little bit yesterday, which is that you have to do it in a slightly different manner. So in other words, you have to use what's called a kanon or a tamchui, which is what yesterday, some kind of a tray or a basket, which is like a slightly less normal way of doing borer, as opposed to using a tablet or a sieve or a winnower or a sifter, things that are more normally used for sorting, winnowing, sifting, that type of activity. And then Rabban Gamliel says that you can even rinse off the beans and skim off the psola, skim off the husks and the shells and whatever. So basically, Rabban Gamliel gives you carte blanche to do whatever you want. He says you could rinse them, skim off, the outer shell of the beans, and it's totally fine. So now the Gemara qualifies based on Tanya, Amar Rabban Gamliel, Bamed Varam Amurim Kisha Ha'ochel Meruba Al Psoles, Avo Psoles Meruba Al Ha'ochel, Divrei Akol Noteles Ha'ochel Umeiniach Es Ha'Psoles. So comes Rabban Gamliel, or according to some versions, Rabban Shimon Gamliel, and qualifies based on statement. Beis Hillel in the Mishnah said again that you're allowed to take the psoles, the shells and the husks away, provided that you do it in a slightly different way. You don't use the regular, normal sorting, winnowing device, but you use just a tray or a basket. So comes from Gamaliel and says that's only true when the ochel, when the good stuff, the bean itself, outnumbers or outweighs the shells and the husks. But if there's more shell and husk than bean, then it's a problem. Then the halacha is that you have to just take the ochel, just take the bean, and leave all the psolas, all the garbage on the side, like Beishamai said. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. Psolas meruba la ochel mi'ikam and deshare. There's a much more basic problem here. If you have more psolas than ochel, if the shells and the husks outnumber the bean itself, so then the bean is going to be completely muktzah. Why is the bean going to be muktzah if you have more shell than bean? So Rashi says, because in that case, the bean is going to be batel beruv, and we're going to view the entire thing as if it's basically just psoles, as if it's just garbage. And that, of course, is going to be mukta on yantif. So, in other words, the Gemara is basically asking, forget about borer on yantif. Isn't this just mukta? How are you even allowed to, you know, pick up this bean in the first place? To which the Gemara says, you're right. Lo tzricha de nafish petircha vizutar b'shi'ura. The case is where quantitatively you have more bean than shell, but it happens to be that the shells and the husks are very, very small. They're very hard to pick up, and they're a big pain in the neck. They're a big tircha to actually clean up. So that's the case where the Gemara qualifies and says that in such a scenario you can still clear it away. If you have more psoles than ochal quantitatively, then of course it's mukts, and of course you're not allowed to handle it even in the first place. Okay, then we said Rabban Gamliel Omar Af Mediach V'Sholo. Rabban Gamliel said you can even rinse off and skim the top of the beans off. Tanya Amar Rabbi Elazar Barab Tzadok Kachayim in Hagan Shalbeis Rabban Gamliel Shehayu Mevi'in Delim Molei Adashim Mitzifin Olav Mayim V'Nimtza Ochal Lamatu Psoles Lamala. In the house of Rabban Gamliel, what they used to do is they would bring a bucket full of lentils. They would drown the lentils in water. They would fill it up with water. And then all the good stuff, all the lentils would drop to the bottom, and all the garbage, all the husks and the shells of the lentils would rise to the top, and they could easily scoop it off. Doesn't the Braise say the opposite? In other words, that the lentils would rise to the top and all the psoles would sink to the bottom? The Gemara says, no, lo kasha, haba afra haba gila. It depends what the psoles is. If the psoles is like, let's say, dirt that's on the lentil, the dirt sinks to the bottom of the bucket of water. But if the psoles is, let's say, straw, so straw floats on water, that's going to rise to the top. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Beishamai omrim, ein mishalchin biyom tov elamanos, uveselel omrim, mishalchin behema chaya va'of bin chayin bin shchuten. So first the Mishnah presents the following machlokas. Let's say I want to send a gift to a person on yantif. So Beishamai say that there's a limitation on the types of gifts you're allowed to send on yantif. Namely, you can only send, again, in this specific context, we're talking more specifically about food, but it can really apply to other things as well. But let's just say for the time being, when it comes to food, you have to send food which is already basically ready to eat. Doesn't require any cooking, doesn't require any shchita. The food is ready to go. According to Beishamai, the food must be prepared to eat on the spot. Whereas Beis Hillel say no. Beis Hillel say I can send a guy a live animal, a shechted animal. It makes no difference. I can send him anything I want on Yontif. Then the Mishnah says, Meshalchin yeno shmarim uslasos v'kitnios avalot tevua. Rabbi Shimon Matir Bitfu. I can also send the person wine, oil, flour, or legumes, or beans on Yantif. And then there's a machlokas if I can send him grain. According to the Tanakhama, you cannot send grain because, again, it's not fully processed yet into something which you can eat. But according to Rabbi Shimon, sending grain, sending wheat would be fine. So the Gemara says, Tani Rav Yechiel.
Rabbi, what's the law that they're talking about not sending the stuff?
Okay, so again. Yeah. Again.
Is it a Kenyan that you're not allowed to make a Kenyan?
Well, okay. We're gonna see right now in the Gemara in a second what the issue is. It's really it's more of a Durabanan issue. It's not really a Kenyan issue. We'll see right now what the issue is. Okay. So the Gemara says Tani Rav Yechiel uvilvad shelo yaaseru b'shura. Rav Yechiel qualifies this Mishnah and says even those things that one is permitted to send on Yantif, again depending on which sheet that you follow, you cannot send it with a convoy of people. Why not? So Rashi says because when you send it with a whole convoy of people are gonna think that you're going to the marketplace or you're going to do business. That's the main issue here in the Mishnah, that, you know, if you start sending large gifts and with lots of people, you know, it's going to kind of lose the flavor of Yontif a little bit. So the Gemara says, Tana in Shura Pchusa Mishlosha Bnei Adam. The definition of a convoy of people for these purposes is three people. So you cannot send a gift with three or more people. Then the Gemara says, Boy Ravashi Tlasa Gavri Tlasa Mine Mai Teku. Rav Ashi leaves as an unresolved suffix. What if I have three separate gifts that I want to send with three different people? So that is a suffix. That he's not sure whether that will be mutter on yantif. Okay, then we said Rabbi Shimon Matir Bitfua. Rabbi Shimon allows you to send wheat. Tanya Rabbi Shimon Matir Bitfua. Kigon chitin lasos mihen ludios. Saorim litin lifnei behemto. Adashim lasos mihen resisin. Basically, Rabbi Shimon says you want to send wheat to make it into cookies, into some kind of, you know, cookies or cakes. That's okay. You want to send barley to feed to your animals. That's also fine. You want to send raw lentils to make it into some kind of a lentil dish. All those are okay. Whereas the Tanakhama says, again, like according to Meishama, you can only send things that are fully processed and ready to eat on the spot. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Mishalchin kelim bein tfurin bein she'enan tfurin. Va'afa comes the Tanakhama and says that I can send clothing to you on Yontif as well. Now again, the clothing could be stitched, they could be unstitched. And the clothing could potentially even be shatnez. And again, we'll see in the Gemara why that's okay. Even if they're shatnez, as long as they're needed for yantif, as long as they're l'tzorach hamoed, that's okay. But what I cannot send to you, says the Tanakhama, I can't send what's called a sandal hamesumar, which is basically a spiked shoe. Again, we'll see in the Gemara why not. And you also cannot send shoes that are not stitched together, meaning that they're basically not wearable. Rabbi Huda Omer aflo min alavan mimnei shetzorach uman. You also cannot send a white shoe, because a white shoe requires a craftsman to color it black. The assumption was everyone wore black shoes back then, so if you send a white shoe, it's basically the equivalent of sending a non-wearable shoe. So anything which you can use on yantif, you're allowed to send. Again, the Gemara on tomorrow's office is going to touch that up a little bit, so we'll have to hold off till tomorrow before we explain that last line. Okay, so the Gemara says bishla b'tfurin chazul malbush she'ain tfurin nami chazul chasuye ela kilayim l'may chazu. So I understand clothing that are fully stitched up, obviously you can wear them. And even clothing that are not stitched up fully, I can at least, you know, cover myself, like, you know, basically use it as a blanket. So that makes sense why those are permissible to send to someone else on yantif. But something that's made out of shatnez, what on earth are you going to do with it? Shatnez is usher to wear. What are you going to do with a garment made of shatnez? V'chitema chazu l'meimach tuse, maybe you'll tell me, oh, I could use the shatnez cloth as a cushion for my seat. I could sit on it. Mar says, but that's not true. V'hasanya lo ya'ale alecha avalato yochol lahatzio tachtecha aval amru chachamim asur lasos kein shema tichrach lo nima besoro. Although it's true that mida oraisa, there's nothing wrong with sitting on something made of shatnez, there was a gzera derabanan that forbids one from doing so, because we're afraid that maybe a thread of shatnez will come from the mat and get on your skin. Again, a whole story. So because there was a gzera derabanan not to do that, lamaisa, you're not allowed to sit on a fabric made of shatnez. So what on earth are you going to do with this? V'chitema demavsik midi bene bene. Maybe you'll tell me, no, I stacked up 10 cloths of fabric underneath me, and the bottom one is shatnez, but all the other ones are not. That's also a problem. V'amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi, Amar Rav Yosi ben Shaul, Amar Rebbe Mishum Kahala Kadisha de Yerushalayim, Afilu Eser Matzo Zoa Gabi Zo, V'chilayim Tachten Asher Lishen Alayim. I could have 10 mats, 10 pieces of fabric. If even one of them is made of shatnez, then it's totally usher to sit on all of them. So again, what exactly is the function here of this shatnez garment that I'm sending? So the Gemara says, oh, it must be Ella Bivulon. It must be, we're talking about a curtain that's made out of shatnez. The assumption being that a curtain is not something that you actually wear, and therefore, if it's made out of shatnez, you can use it as a curtain around your window. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'ha'amar ula, mipneima amru vilon tameh, mipneisha hashamash mischamim kenegdo. There's a din that a curtain is mekabel tumah. How could a curtain possibly be mekabel tumah? The only way it could be mekabel tumah is if it's used for something. Specifically, the Gemara says that sometimes if a person had a servant or a waiter or an attendant or whatever it was who got cold that night, they would wrap themselves in the curtain. So you see that a curtain does qualify as a garment, and therefore it should be a problem to make it of shatnez. So again, what exactly are you doing with the shatnez garment that the person's sending to you on yantif? Must be, the Gemara says, ela bekashin. We must be talking about hard pieces of felt and fabric that really do not give you any sort of comfort when you wear them or when you sit on them. That's why the Gemara tells us that these very hard pieces of fabric and felt that came from the city of Neresh are mutter, even if they're made of shatnez, because they don't give you any sort of benefit. And the Gemara ends off, says, Amar of Papa, Ardalin ein bahem yishrim kilayim. So these, again, these very hard felt socks that, again, don't really give you any sort of comfort or benefit are not subject to the isser of shatnez. Amar Rava, Hani tsrari dipshite ein bahem yishrim kilayim, divizrane yesh bahem yishrim kilayim. So Rava makes the following distinction. If I have, let's say, like almost like a fanny pack, like a pouch that's used for money, that's not subject to the isser of shatnez, because the assumption was that the money pouches were very hard. They didn't give you any sort of comfort, but the ones that are used to store seeds apparently were much softer, and that would be subject to an isser of shatnez. However, Rav Ashi Amar Echad Zev Yechad Zeh Ein Ba Mishum Kilayim Lefi Shein Derechim Bekach. Rav Ashi says, no, even the ones for seeds are not subject to the isser of shatnez, because it was not used, it's not normal to warm yourself with a fanny pack, with a pouch, so even if it actually is soft and gives you comfort, it's still going to be okay.